Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Thank you, and let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. Blessed are you, O Lord, my God, King of the universe, Creator of all things. I thank you for your word that has been given to us by you, and that you have called your people to listen to your words. I pray that only your words would prosper and that my words would die. I ask in the name of Yeshua. Amen. This week's Torah portion is Ekev. It is Deuteronomy chapter 7, starting at verse 12 to Deuteronomy 11, verse 25. The Haftarah is Isaiah 49, verses 14 to 26, and Isaiah 50, verses 1 to 11, and 51, verses 1 to 3. And the Brit Hadashah is Romans 8, verses 31 to 39, and Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 to 13. So let's start reading at verse 12. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if you hearken to these judgments, and keep and do them, that the Lord your God shall keep with you the covenant and the mercy that he swore to your fathers. Now let's take a look at that word, wherefore it shall come to pass. That is a phrase there that is the haya. You remember that we had back in the time of Moses there in Exodus when he was out in the desert, and the Lord said that he was who he was, right? Haya asher haya. Well, that means I will be who I will be, or what I will be, you see. And here we have this same word, haya, that it will. It's not a matter of, you know, we're thinking about it. It is. It has been, and it will be. And in this case, it's being used in the future tense, not because, we'll save that's not a pun there, because Ekev is translated as because, but haya is being used as a future tense because it is conditional here, that this will come to pass if, and that word there is ekeb. Ekeb is because, it is if, and it relates to Jacob, and I'm going to show you that here in just a minute. So, haya ekeb, if you will hearken, or shema, okay? Haya ekeb shema. And shema, as we know, means to do and obey. To listen and obey. It doesn't mean that, you know, it goes in this ear here and then passes through our brain unnoticed and it goes out the other side. That's, you know, sometimes we try to use the word listen in that context of it just passing through our mind without our body actually doing anything about it. But that's not the meaning of Shema. So here we have Haya Ekeb Shema. So these are three very important words here at the beginning of this Torah portion. Now, I just said that Ekev is related to Jacob. And in fact, the word Ekev is part of his name, Yaakov. Ekev, Akov, those are the same Hebrew letters there. It's the same word with a different vowel sound, but the word is the same. And of course, Ekev is also, or Akov, I'm sorry, is also the word for heel, which is why Yod, which is the hand, Yod Akov, Yod hand on heel, is how we get the name of Jacob. But there's something else here. In the past, I have talked about Ekev, hand on heel, or on the heel of, because sometimes this Torah portion is rendered as if, because, and on the heel of. Those are three ways that we render this Torah portion's title. On the heel of is akin to discipline. This Torah portion is about our discipline. It's about the condition. You see, we want to make this covenant unconditional. Like, you know, the Lord just does it all. You know, Jesus did away with all that so that we wouldn't have to make any effort or anything. Nope. If you do that, if you say that Jesus did it all, then you completely do away with everything in the Tanakh prior to his birth. And so we need to understand that our participation is required, and it's a required part of the covenant, because he says here, it will come to pass if you akev, if you do what? If you will be disciplined. You see, the hand on the heel, Yaakov, or the akev on the heel of, you see, has to do with discipline. In past years, I have said that this has to do with something similar to dogs and the way that we train dogs. We train them by keeping them on the heel of the master. And I wasn't trying to, say something bad about believers as being dogs. That's not the point. Of course, you know, Yeshua referred to the woman that came to him, and asking him to help her child, that he referred to her as a dog. Why? Because, well, most dogs are just quite simply undisciplined. You know, very few dogs actually get to be disciplined. And when they get disciplined, how that happens is at the heel of the master. So our discipline for accomplishing the fulfillment of this covenant has to do with us staying at the heel of the master, you see? And that's how we get this related Ekev in the beginning of the Torah portion. And he says, and he will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your kine, the flocks of your sheep, in the land which he swore to your fathers to give to you. You know, people ask me all the time, why is it that the evil people seem to prosper? Well, it's going to be a little bit hard maybe to explain and maybe for some people to accept, but these promises have to do with when you're in the land, you see. However, later on in Deuteronomy, he's going to say, you know, when you've been scattered everywhere on the earth and you decide that it's time to come back to me and you do that with all your heart, then I will bring you back to the land, okay? Well, the other thing that he's going to do is he is going to start blessing his people in the midst of the earth, outside of the land, even though he is not sworn to do that. Why would he do that? Well, because we have other promises where he promises his people that wherever they are, he will be there with them. But the particular blessings here are for in the land, and that should make us ever the more grateful that he blesses us out here in the diaspora. You see what I'm saying? I'm not taking away from his blessings on us out here in the diaspora. My personal testimony is that my husband, after my husband died, the Lord has done nothing but take care of me every single month, day, hour, minute. And the fact of the matter is that my husband's testimony, I've heard him give this testimony, is that because of keeping these commandments, we were blessed. So the Father does bless us out here. But the covenant has to do with your possession of the land. See, why we're doing the covenant stuff out here in the diaspora is because we want to get over there and get the full blessing, but we have to start keeping this covenant. Now, I want to bring your attention to something else in here. In here, he says he's going to bless the fruit of our womb and the fruit of the land and the fruit of our corn. That Hebrew word there is dagon. It is from Strong's 1711. Let me get over there and look at that. It's 1715, and the root word is 1711, which is daga, and daga means to spawn or become numerous. So what he's telling you is that he's going to bless you to become numerous, but they've inserted the word corn there, and the reason is that Dagon, with an N, strong 1715, refers to grain. And grain, if you get a handful of grain, you can see that there's just a bunch of them down in there. So it has to do with being fruitful. But here, there's something else that I want to point out to you. I want to point out the agenda of the people who translated the Lord's words into English, because the scrolls remain proper, but our English translations do not. That word should say your grain there and not corn. But why does it say corn? Because corn was part of the ritual for Mithras. And you will understand this when I tell you this, that Mithras was the religion of Rome when Christianity was still outlawed in Rome. And Mithras is an ancient religion going back to ancient Iranian sun god Mithra. And of course, that comes right out of Nimrod, Babylon. I don't have time to go into all of that, but Mithras is the religion that is the foundation for Christianity. And I know that there are many people that don't like to hear that. You see, in the Bible, in the New Testament, there is no religion of Christianity. What there is a sect of Judaism called the Way. And these people do what we're doing now. Back in those days, they followed the Torah and they believed in Messiah. That's what the Way was. And that's what the Hebrew Roots community is now. We are the Way. We believe in Messiah and we keep the Torah. And we reject we reject the authority of the Talmud. Although, I have to say, Brother Judah has had a lot of years in which to consider how to keep the Torah, and so he's written it down in the Talmud, the Mishnah, and so forth, you see. And so we might want to pay attention and use those as references and ask the Holy Spirit, you know, what in those texts are useful to us. And not just throw out that whole baby with the bathwater, you see. But getting back to what the Way was during the time of the apostles in the New Testament, the Way were people like you and me. They believed in the Messiah and they kept the Torah without putting upon themselves the burden of the Talmud, you see. And that's exactly what we do today. Well, that was outlawed in the first 300 and some years of of the Roman Empire after Yeshua resurrected and ascended to his throne. Christianity was not allowed. You were not allowed the Way was not allowed, and it became known as Christianity, but you were not allowed to worship the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You were not allowed to keep the Torah. Those people that did that, they weren't thrown to the lions because they were Christians. They were thrown to the lions because they worshipped the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I know that's a very subtle distinction, but it's an important one because we're getting ready to face that same thing today. You see? And so this reference to corn here, which is part of the rituals that they did to bless Mithras, that's right here in this verse, in verse 13 of Deuteronomy 7. So I just wanted to point that out because it's important for us to know what our English translators did to the Hebrew text. This has nothing to do with not keeping the faith or anything like that. It just has to do with understanding how the translators forced their paganism into the text. Verse 14, and you shall be blessed above all people. There shall not be male or female barren among you or among your cattle. The Lord will take away sickness from you and take away the diseases of Egypt from you. I'm paraphrasing now. And then in verse 16 he says, and you shall consume all the people which the Lord your God shall deliver you. Oh, here comes the first if. I am going to do all these blessings to you if you shall, you know, ekev, hand on the heel, stay at the master's heel and do what I say, consume all the people which the Lord your God shall deliver to you. You shall not pity them. You shall not serve their gods. You will not allow them to be a snare to you. And if you say in your heart, these nations are more than I, how can I dispossess them? Guess what you'll be doing? You'll be bringing a bad report. He's telling them, don't go into the land and say, ooh, these people are greater than we are. How can we dispossess them? No, he's saying, don't be afraid of them. Remember what the Lord did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt, you see? And then he explains, you know, what happened back there. So that when you go into the land to do your if part, you know, that part that's your part to do, he's going to deliver those people to you, but you have to go take the land, that you won't even dare to bring back a bad report about them. He's warning them not to do that. He's also telling them in verse 20 that he's going to send hornets among the enemies, and that the people that they go to fight with, to oust out of the land, will be affronted or affrighted or dread them. The Lord is going to put those nations out of the land, and he's going to use his people to do it. Why doesn't the Lord just go in there and just, you know, take his finger and just wipe them out? No, because that would be, you know, just so easy for him to do that. What he needs is for people to see that he uses his people. He needs the nations surrounding Israel to understand what he says about the curses and the blessings. And he needs the people of Israel and the people in the nations surrounding to understand that this is a cooperative effort. God is not doing an entitlement program here. He does things, you do things, you see, and he needs the nations to see this. And by having his people throw those nations out of the Lord's land, the nations surrounding Israel will see that cooperating with the Lord can bring them blessings as well. And but the Lord shall deliver them, he says in verse 23, and shall destroy them with a mighty destruction until they be destroyed, and he shall deliver their kings into your hand. And the graven images of their gods are they to burn with fire. You shall not desire the silver or gold that is on them. So there's nothing in the land when he turns it over to us. There is nothing. Their kings, their images, their gold, their silver. There's nothing in there that is for you. All of that is to be destroyed. And he says here, neither shall you bring in an abomination into your house, lest you be accursed like it. What is an abomination? Well, it's something that the Lord finds disgusting and detestable. And in this instance, it has to do with idolatry. So the Lord is telling you not to bring anything from the nations or from the people that are in the land into your home. And you'll remember that when they went across the Jordan and Joshua took them to battle the very first time, that we had a fella that brought a curse to Israel because, well, he did. He brought some things into his house, and what he put in his house affected the entire nation of Israel, and a bunch of them died. And so we're not to take upon ourselves anything that any practice or bring any physical objects or any of that. We're not to partake in any of that in the land. And dare I say that we should not be doing it in the diaspora. either. Chapter 8, verse 1. All the commandments which I command you this day you shall observe to do, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember, and again here, see, he's saying remember about the 40 years in the wilderness. In chapter 7, he says, when you go into the land, remember how I brought you out of Egypt so that you won't be afraid to go in and destroy all those people. Now he's saying, when you get in the land, remember the 40 years in the wilderness. See, in order for us to stay humble and to be able to keep ourselves in the land and be thankful that we're in the land and not out there wandering in the wilderness, we are just to continually remember what happened in the wilderness. I believe that in the millennium, that's what we're going to do. We are going to talk about the thousands of years that we have spent wandering in the wilderness, and it will be for the purpose of keeping us from doing the things that the people did in the wilderness so that we can stay in the land. Now, starting in verse 7, he's describing the land that we're getting. It's a land of brooks of water. You know, there's running water and fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, he says. A land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, oil, olive, and honey. These things are abundant there. And he's before in other places, he has said this is a land flowing with milk and honey. And the reason that he says the land flows with milk and honey is because milk and honey was part of the ritual that the pagans did to their deities, you see. And so the Lord is saying that when he says it's flowing with milk and honey, he's saying that the abundance comes from the land. We're not attributing it to false gods, you see. We're attributing it to the land. That's where he wants us to understand that our abundance comes from, and by extension, it comes from him, because he has made the land this way, you see. And he is giving us this wonderful piece of property. But possession of this land comes with a caveat. And again, we have it here in verse 11. Beware that you forget not the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day. You see, that's our part. That's the Ekev part, where we stay on the heel of the master. Then the Lord continues to explain to us that he is going to go before us, that he is a consuming fire, that he will be with us when we go in to take the land. And he gets down all the way down here to chapter 9, verse 4, which is another very important thing for us to remember, that we speak not in our own hearts after the Lord has cast them out from before you, you know, after he has given them to you for you to slay them all, that you don't say in your heart, it's because of my righteousness that the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. No, that's not what it is. It's not because you're so righteous. It's because they are so wicked. And right now, what we've got going on in Israel is some of the most wicked stuff on earth. One of the greatest abominations that can happen on the earth, anywhere, is homosexuality. And Tel Aviv is one of the capitals, maybe the capital of the earth, for homosexual activity. And then, of course, we have Judah Judah is being compelled to give away more of the land that doesn't even belong to them. Now, I know you're sitting there going, yes, it does belong to them. Yes, it's their inheritance. It is our inheritance. But you see, we don't get to sell the land. We don't get to give it away. We don't have any authority over that land in that capacity. And that's important for us to remember. Let me give you an analogy. A farmer has 12 sons, and all 12 sons have plots of land on the family farm. Can any one of those 12 sons give away or sell his part or the entire part of the land? No. Why? Because the farmer is still alive. As long as the testator, as long as the one who gives the inheritance is still alive, that land cannot be given away or sold. That means that Judah is being compelled now to violate the land in that way, you see? And so that is an abomination that's going on there. There's a whole lot of abominations that go on in the land right now. And so it's not because of our righteousness that we get to possess the land, but because of the wickedness of the nations that are there. And right now, the wicked nation is the Palestinians and the Arabs. You see, those are the main groups that are there now that we are going to dispossess. The Lord is going to turn them over to us to dispossess them from the land. Actually, he's going to lead the army before us that will do that, which is exactly what the Lord just said here in this Torah portion, that he is going to go before them to wipe them out, and we're not supposed to have pity on them, you see. Now, in the rest of the Torah portion, Moses talks about the history and the things that they've gone through. And why does he go to so much reiteration of the past? Why does he want to remind them of what they have come through? Why does he spend so much time with that? Well, it is because he does not want these people to make the same mistakes. Human beings are not apparently very bright. We have to constantly go back and live our history. You know, birds and other animals, they're born with a natural instinct of what to do and what not to do, but humans have to learn these things. That's why we have to constantly be reminded of the mistakes of others, and especially the mistakes that were made in the past. If we go down to Deuteronomy 11:22, he says, "For if you will diligently keep all these commandments which I command you, to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave to him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, and you shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves." So all of this history is to show the people what it's like when you are not in possession of the land, you see? And it's to help them avoid the mistakes in the future. And we've got a time coming up, in fact, we're in it. We're in a time when in this Hebrew Roots community, we're just making all kinds of mistakes. We are being wretched to each other. We're being wretched to the Lord, because when we're wretched to each other, we're wretched to the Lord. And we've got people who are denying the scriptures. They twist the scriptures, and some are now saying it's nothing more than folklore, myths, and legends, you see. And we've got a whole host of problems coming into the Hebrew Roots community that's already been visited on Christianity for the last 2,000 years. And it's taking this little bitty group called the Hebrew Roots movement and splintering it up into this little bitty tiny pieces. Well, that's not what the Lord wants. He wants us to be unified going into the land. He wants us to love each other, and he wants us to go ahead and just diligently keep his commandments and to love the Lord our God, to walk in his ways, and to cleave to him. What does it mean to cleave or cling to the Lord? Well, best and simplest answer is that you get all of your information from him. Now, does a teacher have the ability to put forth information from the Lord? Yes, of course. Does a prophet have the ability to speak the words of the Lord? Yes, of course. Does a lay person have the ability to do these things. Yes, but it's our job to figure out if that teacher is telling us things that are in line with the Torah. If it doesn't line up with the Torah, then it's not from the Lord. And so the first part of cleaving to the Lord is for us to get into these commandments, for us to do the study, for us to be the Berean and understand what's in there. That way we can recognize the truth when we hear it and recognize the false when we hear it. You see, but so many people in the Hebrew Roots community now are just simply following a teacher. This is wrong. There is not a teacher alive who is worthy to be followed. It's good that we listen to teachers. I listen to teachers all the time. It's good to listen to them and compare what you know with what's in the Word. And that's what it means to cling and to diligently keep His commandments. And in verse 22 of chapter 11 there, he equates it to loving the Lord your God and walking in His ways, you see? So we need to keep our focus on what he's telling us in these commandments. We need to keep our focus on the Ekev. We need to keep our focus on the very first verse of this Torah portion, which is that it will come to pass if you hearken or listen. Haya Ekeb Shema. So if you, Haya Ekeb Shema, keep your attention on the heel of the Master and walk every step with Him, then you will be cleaving and clinging to Him. I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you.